Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some good news today out of the Senate. I know it's easy to complain about the Senate, and I have done a lot of that. But maybe there are issues, a handful, one or two, that we can find some bipartisan support on. And look, I think China's got to be one of those. I think given the realities of coming out of this pandemic, realizing that we've given away our manufacturing base and we can no longer support ourselves, I think it's gotten some folks awakened, which is why today we saw the vote. What was it? 68-32 was the vote. You got 19 Republicans to come along with the Democrats, including Mitch McConnell. Pretty impressive. On the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. For me, the biggest part of it all was that eight Republicans voted not to strip prevailing wage from this legislation. To me, that's a big, that's enormous. I kind of think they don't know what it is. Just my thought. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the passage of the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. It is great to be with you. And just so your audience knows, there's a little thunder and lightning. So might add a little spice to the conversation.
As long as you don't get struck, we're good. So what do you think of this? Let's start with the first part, the part that took me. Texas Senator Cornyn, he put forth an amendment to strip prevailing wage out of this legislation so that the jobs that'd be created could be poverty wage jobs. And you got eight Republicans to vote against that. I find that shocking.
Yeah, well, I mean, Rick, you remember, I guess 20 years ago, that there were a few pro-labor Republicans.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago, Scott.
Well, right, exactly. It was a while ago. And so that number, I'll candidly admit, is a bit of a surprise. When the rubber hits the road and there's a vote, that would come to get this into law, would they vote the same way? I don't know. Maybe they know that there's a long process that lies ahead. This legislation has to go through the House of Representatives. So we will see. I do think part of that, and we could have a whole separate conversation about this, is that these Republican attempts to make inroads to the working class, I've always said, yeah, you can talk about trade or China, you can do that, but you also have to be for family leave, you have to be for the minimum wage increasing to a living wage. You have to be for provisions like David, and you have to be for things like the right to organize and the PRO Act if you're really going to be pro-labor. So a few of them, obviously, were able to check this box, but there's still a long way to go. That said, the fact that there was a bipartisan vote on anything is really shocking, and as an industrial policy advocate, really amazing to see, and hopeful and promising.
No, you're absolutely right. And you start, but here's where my mind goes. You go, look, you know, our auto industries, you know, was shut down for a while because we didn't have the semiconductors that we need to do things. We don't have critical components. So I look at the Republican Party as, and you can disagree, and that's okay, as wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America, along with a good portion of the Democrats. So when corporate America is saying, hey, we need something, it's not surprising that the Republicans come and help get that. And they're talking about, $50 billion over the next 5 years to subsidize only semiconductor manufacturing?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
tells me that they know that this is a major shortfall in our economy.
Well, 100%. And you think of all the industries. I'm just looking around your studio and how many semiconductors there must be just there alone. I mean, we all depend on them in everything. And the automotive sector, telecommunications, even things like fitness equipment. I mean, there's a lot of semiconductors out there. It's an important part of our digital economy and technology. And so, you know, $50 billion sounds like a lot of money. I'm going to say, you know, obviously, I think some Republicans like this because there was a lot in it for big businesses. But there was also a lot in this for working people as well. And that's something that distinguishes this piece of legislation. You know, it's not perfect, but it's not like businesses get ahead and workers get left behind in this. That's simply not the case. And so I do think there's some sense that if we are going to successfully compete with the Chinese government in the future, that we got to be in this together, speaking with one voice. And at least for one day, the Senate was able to do that. But semiconductors are the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's a lot of other serious manufacturing challenges out there, both from a policy perspective. You look at trade policy, which this bill really didn't touch, and you look at things like that. And then you also look at the range of industries that are impacted, from commodity industries like steel and aluminum to semiconductors and everything in between. So this may sound like a major investment, but we are playing a lot of catch up here, just like we are on issues like infrastructure investment. This will allow us to be successful. This doesn't guarantee us to be number one
right. In
the future. It's going to take a lot of hard work to get there, but at least we're not sitting on the sidelines anymore.
No, this is something we have talked about for a very long time. China's been planning the next generation of jobs going to them in aerospace and pharmaceuticals and robotics and 5G technology and all of these things that we've kind of just, well, ceded to them. It's not even like we were competing, because we were sending our jobs over there. Corporate America saw China as the future. The Chamber of Commerce was the main pipeline to shipping jobs overseas, because shareholders were making tons of money. And it's this pandemic, I think, at least I believe, that's kind of shaken us awake and gone, or at least some of us. I've always been against this, but some of us have gone, you know, We're and I hate to use this word, but we're at war, and we've been at war for a very long time. Only we didn't realize it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I know you and I agree, and so your listeners know that we're talking about the Chinese government here. We're not talking about Asians. We're not talking about Asian Americans. We're not talking about Chinese. We're talking about the actions of the Chinese government. And not only do they oppress their own citizens who do not agree with them, and also ethnic minorities, but they have this range of economic policies that allow their firms to get ahead at the expense of everybody else. And that's the problem with their policies. And we've seen tens of thousands of manufacturing facilities close down in the United States over the last 2.5 decades. We've seen millions of manufacturing workers lose their very middle class benefits. And we've also seen, you know, the vulnerabilities that cost us as a society. You know, during the pandemic, we couldn't supply our own PPE. We are running out of semiconductors. In fact, we're flat out. We've got to build more plants to make that happen. And we're behind in the race for electric vehicles. And so what I like about the Senate bill, and also I think what the administration has been doing, is they understand that you have to cross some lines here. In the past, the U.S. government was never willing to do anything that would have violated the World Trade Organization commitments that we made, or some tenet of free trade. But the Senate bill, for instance, has incentives for electric vehicles, if consumers buy them, with an important caveat: they have to be made in America. That was something that Obama was unwilling to do in the Cash for Clunkers program, if you'll remember, back in 2009. There was Cash for Clunkers existed, and people took advantage of it, but there was absolutely no requirement that those vehicles had to be made in America. And so the Senate bill, it has it in there, and it got a huge amount of support. And so I'm thrilled to see us making policy advances like this, because it's going to be beneficial, obviously, to our security, but also to job creation in the manufacturing sector.
No, and on that war front, because a lot of people want to shy away from it, especially my lefty friends who say, no, we can be friends with the Chinese communist government. And maybe we can, but not on this line, because, you know, on this war front, we're seeing the Chinese government becoming much more aggressive We're seeing the rhetoric coming out of the Chinese state media, much more aggressive. They want to start, you know, competing on the nuclear level with us. And yet we don't make those things. In fact, you guys did the most comprehensive report that I've seen on our dependency on the Chinese with regard to our military that anybody's done. And that was, what, 10 years ago? It should have been a wake-up call then. Here we are now, all these years later. It's only gotten worse.
Yeah, it sure has. And you can expand that list. And it was a big 350-page report. And people read it, but they never took action. I do see the Senate taking action. You know, the White House released a supply chain review earlier in the day that touched on a number of these issues in key areas like lithium-ion batteries and semiconductors and pharmaceutical active ingredients and rare earth minerals that are in every technological device that we have, but which we have a hard time acquiring. And so I think there is awareness, and I completely agree with you. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party does not want to be friends with the United States. We should be clear about that right away. And we had about two decades where people believed, you know, if only we trade more with China, it will become more democratic. And there's absolutely nothing in the experience with the Chinese Communist Party which would suggest that, even though that was like what all the elites, all the pundits were saying. That is demonstrably false. That is simply not the case. Now, I don't think we want to go out and seek a shooting war with China. We do not want to do that. We want to avoid that. But we certainly need to defend our own interests, our own values, democracy, our economic well-being, and our middle class. And that's going to involve some tough decisions. Some of those are about investing here at home, which the Senate has acted on and the Biden administration is suggesting as well. And some of that is standing up to these unfair trade practices. Trump started it. He did it kind of wildly and unilaterally and inelegantly. But I think that, you know, Biden can build on that, can make it much more strategic, can engage our allies in that as well to make it a more successful effort.
Do you see this going forward as something that both parties in a nonpartisan way will continue to understand? And because, you know, look, I'm pretty shocked in a way that the Republicans came along, because they're the ones who believe in the free market. They're the ones who don't believe in any government intervention into the markets. Yet here they are. We've seen some movement to saying, yes, government does have a role in this and government should play into this, which is kind of a departure from their ideology. Do you see that going forward possibly?
Yeah, I do. And obviously, you know, about half of them still feel that way, right? You know, about half of the Senate Republicans kind of still feel that way, that we shouldn't be doing this or that. But half of them have on the other side. And I do think it's this sense of urgency and desperation that you have to divorce yourself from philosophy when you see that philosophy failing.
Right.
And you have to be willing to be pragmatic and to try different things. And the stakes are too high, because if we get behind China on all of this, it does threaten our economy and it does threaten our security. And that's I think that's a wake up call. And so there may be many different reasons for doing what the Senate is doing and what we hope the House of Representatives will follow through on as well. But we're happy, I mean, that it's bipartisan. I can't imagine anybody thought the Senate would do anything bipartisan this year of substance. And yet, I'll give credit to Senator Schumer. He stuck with it. He stuck with this process. The bill is not perfect. There is stuff that I'd like to get out of there, Rick, you know, just like everybody else, and hopefully we can. But to their credit, you know, I think Republican senators like Todd Young, John Cornyn were willing to see this through. And so it does strike me that this is one of those rare bipartisan moments, and that there's a lot of support for advancing American interests, and in particular, revitalizing manufacturing.
No, and that's, again, that's something that the Biden administration has, you know, Joe Biden's been talking about for a while. Yeah, and one of those commitments that as a country we should be making, because, you know, I go back to that war frame. The reason, I was told we won World War II is because we had the capacity to change our industrial might and make it a war production machine. We don't have that same kind of production capacity. And this is a different war front. Semiconductors being on that war front. Cybersecurity being on that war front. The technology, the 5G technology that we're so far behind on. For me, this is that ramping up to protect ourselves from those attacks.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, obviously, that type of security concern is going to look a lot different than it did a generation ago. But we are, and part of this is because we just simply, we had this mantra for so long, not you and I, but MBAs, the ruling class, all of this, that you can design it here, you can make it somewhere cheap, and everybody will be better off. Well, we know that's not the case. Yes, shareholders are better off, but the working class is certainly not, and our security has suffered. And so as we're trying to engage in these industries of the future, we're actually having to borrow know-how, ideas, capital from overseas to do it, because we fell behind on things like lithium-ion batteries or wind power or solar power. And to Joe Biden's great credit, he wants to have it be homegrown, and I'm 100% in favor of that. And it may take a tiny bit longer than environmentalists want, but at the end of the day, it's going to be worth it because it means we're doing something about the climate, we're doing something about security, and we're doing something about American jobs and rebuilding the middle class, which I think ultimately will build more political support for the goal of having a more renewable energy future in the United States.
Yeah, it's something we need. Last question I've got for you. So, you know, it's got to go through the House. The Democrats control the House. What are the chances that this gets shot down in the House?
Well, look, I do think that there will be a competition package. I don't know when the Speaker will schedule it. I will say I've known Nancy Pelosi since the late 1980s. And she's been concerned about China and human rights and economic practices in China for a very long time. I remember being on the floor of the House of Representatives. I was working for the House Democratic Whip, David Bonner, at the time. And Nancy Pelosi gave one of the closing speeches against normalizing trade relations with China back in 2000, which looked like a really wise decision, more than 20 years later. And so she's got a personal interest in this. And I think there's wide support in the caucus for doing something about it as well.
Yeah, we need to get something done. Like you said, it's not perfect, but it's a start. We need to be investing in our domestic capacity to build research and development and manufacturing without question. But Scott, I appreciate the time. I appreciate your information. As always, good stuff, my friend.
You bet, Rick. Keep it up.
All right, good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Make sure you check out their website, Alliance for American Manufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.